Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. And finally, it's time to talk about the food for tomorrow. Those bland, beloved dishes of Thanksgiving and some creative last-minute ways to make them better.
What's this? A piece of toast? A pretzel stick? Popcorn? What blockhead cooked all this? What kind of a Thanksgiving dinner is this? Where's the turkey, Chuck? Don't you know anything about Thanksgiving dinners? Where's the mashed potatoes? Where's the cranberry sauce? Where's the pumpkin pie?
In case you don't recognize it, that's from A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. And I think it hides a really genuinely deep question. What if the blockhead is right? Like, what if we should skip the turkey, skip the cranberry sauce, try something new? Joining me now is local treasure Joanne Chang. She's a James Beard Award-winning pastry chef, owner of Flower Bakery and Myers & Chang Restaurant. Joanne, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Boston-based food writer Leah Menes. Leah, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Joanne, you're having a pretty busy day. Can you give us a sense of what you're doing on this Thanksgiving Eve?
So Thanksgiving Eve is our very busiest day. It is the day in which everybody in Boston comes to us to get their Thanksgiving pastries, pies, stuffing, gravy, etc. So I spend my day running around from location to location, checking out the pastry display, and then also just being on hand if somebody needs a pint of gravy that was supposed to be at one location and is at another location.
That does sound very busy. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Not because you need a pint of gravy and expect Joanne to come bring it to your house, but because we want to know what you're doing for Thanksgiving. Is it traditional turkey? Is it lasagna, a noodle bowl? If you've moved away from turkey, are you ready to give up all the sides? Cranberry sauce, stuffing, mashed potatoes. Give us a call. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or tweet us at Radio Boston and tell us, is it time for a new Thanksgiving? Leah.
Hello.
How are you? How are you handling this Thanksgiving?
We in my house have something that I like to call a very allergen-free Thanksgiving. We have the same, you know, three or four dishes that have been in my family for probably 30 or so years. But lately, we've been adding a lot of very vegetable-centric dishes that happen to be vegan or gluten-free or dairy-free because of the many food allergies that are all throughout my extended family.
And it makes sense that you would carry on a tradition because you're interested in the history of food. I mean, your focus, you wrote a recent piece for Boston Magazine called
I did.
Why Don't New Englanders Like New England Cuisine? And first of all, what's New England cuisine?
Well, I think that's part of the biggest challenge. That question is kind of the crux of the piece, I think, where, you know, I've covered food for a long time in this area, and I was looking around and realizing, you know, in the past couple of years, Boston has gotten about a dozen different regionally specific Southern restaurants, and Southern food has been this global phenomenon. But New England has such old historical deep-rooted food traditions, and it was really interesting to me that that hadn't translated to something that was similarly popular. And we have a lot of, you know, the very old school, more touristy places these days, like Union Oyster House or Durgan Park. And then the more higher end restaurants that have tried to play with some of those historical New England dishes have really struggled to find a lasting success with diners. And a lot of times they hear, I don't get it.
So this seems connected to Thanksgiving in a way, because Thanksgiving, to some degree, embodies traditional New England cuisine, the local bird. Local roots. Is the traditional Thanksgiving meal, do you think, afflicted by this sort of lack of creativity in New England food?
You know, I almost see it as the opposite. I think we're probably more inclined in this meal that's one time a year to really like sink into something that's nostalgic and is going to give us all of these memories and we're eating it for tradition's sake. But I think that type of experience is not what you're trying to go to a new hip restaurant to get. So that's why I think the notion that New England has is very tied to this idea of a traditional Thanksgiving doesn't translate well to a restaurant perspective. But I do think, you know, there's a difference between having the turkey once a year and having that, you know, once a week.
So you're more okay with a traditional New England Thanksgiving?
I'm fine with it. You know, we try at my family Thanksgiving, we try to add a couple, as I mentioned, different dishes to shake things up. But I think it's more about the getting together with family than it is about the specific dishes sometimes. Whereas when you're going out to eat, you really are caring about the food that you are eating.
So you tell an interesting story about Peking ravioli and the innovation behind that, how it brought something new to New England cuisine when you're going out. Give us a sense of that story.
Oh, that story. So basically, the idea that when we talk about what constitutes New England cuisine, we keep kind of going back to the same idea of clam chowder or baked beans or things that kind of arose out of when the colonists came to New England. And it's interesting that we keep kind of focusing on that one snapshot in time when there's so many other different stories that are unique to this area. So I didn't grow up in this area, so I think maybe I was able to notice that. Why is Peking ravioli on menus everywhere? I've never seen this anywhere else. And I looked into it, and in the 1960s, when Joyce Chen, a very prominent Chinese cook, opened her restaurant, she realized that a large Italian population, maybe wasn't going to understand what a pot sticker was. So she called it Peking ravioli so that this dining population in Boston would have a better sense of what it was that they were eating. And that has stuck around, and there's a really interesting story behind it that is uniquely New England, but obviously very far from what we think of as clam chowder, baked beans.
So this seems like a potential solution to Thanksgiving. I mean, I know that the sanguine Thanksgiving story hides all manner of sins on the part of colonists visited against native peoples, but maybe we could turn the story against itself, make it about what Thanksgiving should always have been about: cultural exchange, sharing. It seems like a reason to remind listeners that we want to hear more about their creative Thanksgiving dishes. Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. And also to turn to Joanne, who's an expert in fusion. I mean, give us a sense for what your Thanksgivings were like growing up.
Well, my Thanksgivings were definitely not traditional. I grew up in a very traditional Taiwanese family, and we never had turkey. I think the only turkey I had ever had was in the Swanson TV dinners when my parents would go
sure,
out on a
peel
date.
Off the plate.
I loved it. And I loved the little apple compote and the mashed potatoes with a little pat of gravy and the green peas. I mean, it was so different from the food that I typically ate, which was rice and stir fries and tofu. So when Thanksgiving came around every year, I think my parents were kind of flummoxed, like, what do we do? And they knew they were supposed to put a bird on the table, so we always got roast duck.
Which is a bird.
It is a bird, and it's a very delicious bird. And my mom would either roast a duck, or she would go to the area Chinese grocery store where there were hanging ducks, and she would buy a couple of ducks. And then we would always do, again, stir fries and rice. And it was, to me, the meal was all about bounty and just eating as much as we possibly could and not having to go to school the next day, which was pretty awesome. but I never had turkey. We had turkey, I think, one year. My parents said, okay, well, we're going to try this. And no one really liked it. I don't know if my mom overcooked it, or I'm not sure what she did. But I know that we didn't have it again. It was early on, and then we stopped.
So you knew from a young age that turkeyless Thanksgiving was still Thanksgiving.
Totally. I didn't realize that you had to have turkey with Thanksgiving.
Well, we've got a call from John from Cambridge, who has his own interesting cultural twist on Thanksgiving. John, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
So I saw this show called, I think it was called Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat on Netflix.
Sure.
The acid episode was about pavo and escabeche. So it's a Mexican dish from the Yucatan. It's turkey rubbed with this ricotta, this Mexican spice thing, and then braised in stock. And so I'm making that. I'm going to put the spice mix under the skin, braise my turkey, and serve it with refried beans, tortillas, rice, roasted butternut squash. And for dessert, a chocolate cream pie with cinnamon in the chocolate and a cranberry orange jam in between the chocolate and the cream to kind of bring a little Thanksgiving tradition, but have it be Mexican-inspired. So that's my plan.
Oh, I'm salivating.
I love that.
That sounds great.
It sounds amazing.
All right, let's add a caveat. Listeners who call in with delicious recipes are obligated to invite us to join them for their Thanksgiving meals hereafter. Thank you for... No, but if you do have a story like the one John just told, give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. Joanne, So what is it that makes Thanksgiving, if it's not the turkey, what is it that makes Thanksgiving Thanksgiving for immigrant families, for any families?
Well, for me now, it is the turkey. I love Thanksgiving.
You've come around to the turkey.
Tomorrow, yes. And, well, I'm lucky in that, you know, for a couple of years after college, I did the, you know, let's get a bunch of friends together and just cook a bunch of random things and celebrate. And then I got into the food business. And I would make my way through, you know, different friends who were cooks who would cook Thanksgiving dinner for me. And then eventually I would host Thanksgiving dinner. And
so you travel to like other people who are great cooks.
Oh, yeah. And so
that's not bad.
Now I love turkey. I'm excited. I can't wait for tomorrow. But I think, you know, you don't have to have turkey, obviously. I think what John just mentioned, he has this idea of the turkey and the chocolate cream pie, but he's adding his own cultural take to it, which I think is fabulous. And I think that's what Thanksgiving is all about. It's about a day of getting together with family and friends and getting to eat and share stories and laughter and just enjoy the day. And it can be centered around turkey for sure, but it doesn't have to be. And I think it's an awesome, awesome way to just take a moment and just give thanks.
And even if it is centered around turkey, there are different ways to do turkey. We have a call from Corey in Medford who has a question about what sort of turkey, or wants to share something about turkey. Corey, what are you doing for turkey?
Yeah, well, it was really more of a question. I live in a rural part of the state, and we have a bunch of wild turkeys that I see all year round, and I'm curious how different they are from the store-bought turkeys, whether anybody has a tradition of hunting and preparing wild turkeys in Massachusetts.
Joanne, do you have any experience hunting wild turkey, or have you eaten that?
No, I spend time avoiding the wild turkeys in Brookline because they're a bit scary. But no, I don't. I honestly don't know that one, unfortunately.
I don't either. In all of my visits to all my chef friends' house, I don't think I've ever had a wild turkey.
Well, I guess we should say then, if anybody listening has done this, gotten a wild turkey, taken down a wild turkey, and decided to serve it, I'd love to hear. I think all of us would love to hear how you prepped it and what it tastes like. So, I mean, pass the turkey. Joanne, the sides. Do you have a favorite side? Do you like fused sides, innovative sides? Do you like traditional sides?
I like it all. Honestly, I like it all. I've cooked Thanksgiving meal at my house. My husband Christopher and I have hosted a couple times, and I always put a little bit of an Asian twist to it because it's just what I know. I've done
give us a specific.
Yeah, so like rather than stuffing, I do love stuffing, but I've made a sticky rice stuffing, which is basically steaming sticky rice. I cook it with some chicken stock and some mushrooms, a little ginger, some Chinese sausage, some cilantro, and it adds the same type of flavor that traditional stuffing does. It's like a nice, it's a nice counterpart to gravy and turkey. And the turkey itself, I will baste with soy sauce and honey. Again, a little bit of ginger, a little bit of garlic. Roasting carrots with miso. It's a dish that we actually have on the Myers and Chang menu, but you know, people love roasted carrots for Thanksgiving, and so we add a little Asian twist by sautéing them with a little bit of red miso paste.
That sounds amazing. We do some curry with our carrots, a similar kind of
mix. Sounds great.
Leah, do you have a favorite fused side dishes?
So we've had the same, I think it's like a Pat Nixon stuffing has been that my grandmother clipped out of a newspaper, has been our family stuffing forever. But a few years ago, I introduced a raw kale and Brussels sprout salad, and that has been a huge hit. So that's been the newest addition, I would say. We're also making a cauliflower salad this year that has a tahini dressing. So that'll be a little bit different, too.
You shred the Brussels sprouts for...
Yeah, I usually cut them myself, actually, because I like it. It's a nice meditative kitchen task, and I also find that I just like it better than the pre-shredded ones. But
Well, we have a call. Steve from Barnstable wants to talk about, not carrots, but the related root vegetable. Steve, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, so first of all, thanks for being heard. I just want to put a plug in for the humble turnip. I mean, for those that are not aware, East Ham here on Cape Cod, it's really got some wonderful turnips known as the East Ham turnip. Turnip, I think as many know, is a superfood. I want to hear from others out there recommendations about cooking turnip. I'm responsible this year for cooking up turnips, and I'm looking for some new ideas.
Joanne, you have a turnip recipe you want to share?
I mean, I don't have a turnip recipe off the top of my head, but I love turnips, and Turnips are really popular in Asian cuisine, and I love roasting turnips, and I love sautéing turnips, and I think with a little bit of garlic and just on high heat to roast them or sauté them so that you can get some of the sweetness out and get them caramelized a little bit, I think they'd make an awesome side dish.
Because they do, they have a kind of sweetness.
They do.
On the back. Yeah.
But you have to cook them on really high heat.
Leah, do you have a turnip, favorite turnip approach?
I don't have one that I make personally. I don't know that this applies to this type of turnip, but I do tend to really love them when they're pickled or shaved raw in a salad. But otherwise, I would go with whatever Joanne tells you, for sure.
So the other thing about, you know, thinking about fusion, we've been talking mostly about flavors. It's not just flavors. It's also techniques, right? Are there techniques from other cuisines, Joanne, that you think people should be bringing to their holiday meals?
One thing that I've always been curious about is when I go to Thanksgiving dinner and I see a lot of wonderful vegetable side dishes, and the vegetables all seem really mushy and cooked almost to death.
Overcooked.
Well, yes, that's what it seems like to me, but I think that sometimes that's part of the traditional Thanksgiving meal. And in terms of techniques, the classic way to prepare vegetables in Asian cuisine, at least from my experience, is in a wok, high heat. And I know that a lot of people don't have a wok at home, but you can do it in a skillet and just crank up the heat super, super high, add a little bit of oil, throw in some aromatics, some scallions, some garlic, some ginger, and then throw in your vegetables and saute them on high heat. And again, it caramelizes and gets all the sweetness out of whatever vegetable that you're
But you maintain cooking. Some of the crunchiness. It's not like
exactly.
the mushy, long
right.
cooked
and you still have
vegetables.
The bright color, all of the really great flavors of the vegetable.
So
I think that solves a big Thanksgiving problem, which is that there's so much crowding going on in the oven. It makes it really difficult for things to get crispy and roasty, and doing something that you can do on the stovetop is very helpful.
Oh, it's a nice thought, because one of the problems is an overstuffed oven on Thanksgiving. You have one, even if you have two, it gets full. The turkey's taking up a whole oven. You can borrow techniques from other cuisines to make use of the stovetop. Alex from Brookline has an innovative Thanksgiving tradition. Alex, how do you do Thanksgiving?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well.
So, my group of friends is a group of international people. So everybody brings a little dish from somewhere else, from wherever they are from. I'm from Colombia, and then what I do is I like the mashed potatoes, but to me, it's so bah. So what I do, I make an hogao, which is sauteing tomatoes, onions, cilantro, garlic, all these things, and I mix it up with the potatoes, with the mashed potatoes. It gives it flavor and color, and makes it a little bit different.
Oh, that sounds really
That sounds incredible.
Delicious.
That sounds wonderful.
We got consensus on
salivating.
This, and we all endorse that dish.
We're all going to take that idea.
I will say we have an update from Natasha from Manchester. This is an interesting one, because we asked if anyone had gotten a turkey and made it. Natasha, tell us your story.
So, yeah, when I was growing up, we lived on a blueberry farm in Maine, and we didn't kill a wild turkey, but my grandfather bought us baby turkeys to raise during the summer and then kill for Thanksgiving. And when it came time to kill the birds, my dad thought it was too cruel to cut their heads off. So he was a really good shot, and he decided that he would just shoot them between the eyes. Unfortunately, with the first turkey, he shot it between the eyes, and the turkey was still walking around. So by the time the whole fiasco was over, my mother's friend had, cut their heads off, and then we did not eat those turkeys that Thanksgiving. We gave them all away.
Understood. We have another call on this topic from Ryan in Beverly. Ryan, you have some experience with wild turkeys? Ryan, are you there talking about wild turkeys? I guess we don't have Ryan. I guess we lost Ryan. But he does kill and eat wild turkeys. He says they're hard to get. I think it's too late for that. If you're planning Thanksgiving tomorrow, it's too late to go hunting and prep your turkey. But I will ask, what is it not too late for? Okay, let's say people out there, it's Wednesday, And they really want to spice up their Thanksgiving table. They don't know quite how to do it. And I'll ask each of you to sort of recommend like a dish or an approach that you might say to them, now there's still time. This is what you should do. Joanne, you have a thought?
I mean, if it's Wednesday afternoon and you're, you know, and you haven't planned anything, then something that's really quick and easy to put together. I know that people love the traditional cranberry sauce in a can, but making a cranberry chutney with some fresh cranberries, a little bit of ginger, some orange. We've added dried cherries to ours this year. Is a really great way to add just something different and innovative, but still a little bit traditional to your spread.
Yeah, and it connects to the local issue. We have cranberry bogs here in Massachusetts.
Right. And it's quick and easy.
Yeah. Leah, do you have a thought? Last minute, you want to spice up your table?
I would say take some vegetables that you already bought for, to have as a side and maybe shake up the way that you prepare them. So maybe you're going to shave them and serve them raw instead of steaming them, or take a cue from Joanne and use an interesting seasoning or spice for it and just make it a little bit different that way.
And we've been talking, we talked turkey, sides, desserts, right? That's important too. It, has there been the same kind of interest in sort of fusion or mixing approaches to desserts as there has been with savory dishes? Joanne, do you, I mean,
I do see that a little bit. At Flower, though, we really do focus on the traditional. You know,
I go for brioche.
Yeah, you love the brioche. We sell pecan, apple, and pumpkin, and that's what people really want. And every year we put something interesting and new and try to add something a little bit. Maybe it's not even innovative, but just something a little bit less traditional. And people want pumpkin. They want pecan. They want apple.
That's what they come for.
That's
they're
what they
not
want.
On Thanksgiving. They're not thinking, oh, I want some pie, pecan pie with Chinese five spice something. That would be really interesting. I mean, Leah, do you have a special dessert that you are preparing, looking forward to preparing?
No, that I'm leaving to everyone else, and I'm just going to have a slice of everything.
Well, that's Boston-based food writer Leah Menes. You can read her piece in Boston Magazine. It's called Why Don't New Englanders Like New England Cuisine? Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
Also with us is Joanne Chang. She's a James Beard Award-winning pastry chef and the owner of Flower Bakery and Myers & Chang. Joanne, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Zoe Mitchell, with help from Eve Zukoff. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Evan Horowitz. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.